Blog Talk Radio.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's about what approximates our aspirations for each day that we go around. Sometimes it comes out approximately the way we expect, and most often, believe it or not, we adjust, we adapt, we make the best of the situation in front of us, and that strengthens us in our confidence that each and every day, we have that capability with us in our pocket to use as we need. And it's not something that's rusty unless it's deliberately suppressed. It's something that is polished from continual use. And if we think about it seriously, it's a confidence builder. It tells us that even though the situation that we're facing may be daunting, we have a capability unknown at the time to ourselves. How to do that without being arrogant, how to do that with some degree of humility, and as we're reminded, with some degree of dignity that befits the gentleman or the person that we are. It's undignified for us at a certain stage in our life to carry on like we're children, to apply, to think that we can talk and speak and react without any filters. Well, it may have been fine for our mothers when we were infants, but as we grow older, we begin to understand, or we should begin to understand, not from what is offered to us, but by the preparation that occurs, whether we are available, whether we have access to a wonderful mentor at a very early age, or that mentorship has to come later in life, it doesn't really matter. The fact is, you have the awareness. You can have the resentment, of course. Put a little chip on your shoulder, let that lower lip extend, and carry on as if the world and other people have owe you a great debt that will never be paid. Oh, how unfair for the world to treat you that way. And then our intelligence and our observation picks up. No matter our lot in life, the defining moment is how we define ourselves by our actions and behavior. And you often think of the fellow with the broom on the shop floor. He may be doing the menial task for all of the people involved for the place and the situation. However, it's when he is doing it to the very best of his ability, to the very best of what's required, that it brings a dignity not only to him, but to everybody around him who's observant. For the lout, for the loudmouth, for the braggart, for the ruthless, they don't amount to much, and they don't bring about much in the world. They exist in a more parasitic environment, believe it or not. If you noticed, if you wanted to notice for yourself, the defining moments occur when our behavior is being observed. We exhibit all that's on our mind, the more of the truth than we care to admit, by the way that we conduct ourselves day by day. It's amazing and wonderful to have you here joining us on Masonic Effects on this 286th day of the year. It's 288. There you go. It only leaves us with 77 days left. 77 days left as something called time whizzes by or moves. You know, one thing, the interesting and comforting thing about our situation is nobody escapes alive. Nobody gets out of this alive. We should have some comfort in that. You fatalists and nihilists might be thinking ridiculously, oh, well, then there's no point. Well, that is the point. It's the quality. How are you going to live and enjoy every single day in its fullness, the way you deserve? That's up to you. That's up to me. It's also something that captures the imagination of me within Masonry. These rascals that make us better than we are. These rascalian thoughts that make us ponder and understand and realize. And then that notion of belief. If we begin to believe in ourselves, we begin to believe in certain other propositions. Sometimes it's the other way around. Who do you believe in? What heroes are there out there now and around? Certainly not the ones that were in front of us when we were boys and when we were young. Now, the presence, our being, our agency in a secular environment gives us pause to reason. Wasn't it so much easier when we didn't have to think that we could follow superstition? Wasn't that so much easier? Really? We did things and made our ablutions and our sacrifices and conducted ourselves in order to gain favor with the gods that would preserve us for the next year, to give us good, successful crop and warm us and prepare us and sustain us and our families. Wasn't that good enough? Or when we stopped, believing in the superstition and gained the period of enlightenment where mankind, humanity in large measure, was gaining a sense of agency, a sense that they had each had a voice, we each had a voice, and we each had an ability to reason through and determine the validity of what was going on around us, determine in a way our orientation to life and purpose and direction. Funny in some sense that we do it in the way I was, my culture and the way I was raised did this as if some of the ancient cultures didn't exist. And still we struggle with this. Let's just pretend that the artwork 1,000 years BC in some of the caves carved into the face of cliffs in China, let's pretend that the sophistication of the artists didn't reveal their advancement, and that advancement would take, those discoveries would take us, my culture, thousands of years later to discover. Let's not give too much credit where credit's due. Let's not think of the skills, the abilities so that we can satisfy what? An ethnocentric view of the world? Doesn't really matter. The world has never been that way. We've always been in it together. And it's not for lack of trying. Do we have the intelligence to survive, to rid the oceans of the plastics and microparticles, to clean up the water from the chemicals that we're pouring into it every day and the oceans? Well, it's not whether we have the intelligence or whether we have good answers or not. We have barriers. We can find more ways to fail to progress than we can care to admit. And we do find ourselves in a bit of a dilemma. And that, I think, do we move forward and put our faith and our trust in what we know today is the best science? Maybe 100 years from now, turned on its ear. Do we act on that? Do we act on, as men of science and purpose and ethic, attempt to preserve? At the least, we'll fail trying. Well, that's an interesting question. I think in part we are having those discussions now. But it's ruining, these discussions by thoughtful people are really ruining the quarrelsome pettiness of the media, what the media feeds us, and what it's not called propaganda anymore, is it? If we're doing it, it's called the truth. If somebody else is doing it, it's propaganda. This is where the role and behavior of those foolish men and people, women, Masons, Freemasons, that scurrilous bunch of people that sort of are now looking at privacy and secrecy different. Well, you and I declare that. We have a bearing. If people are around us are feeling uncertain, it doesn't necessarily mean we are. Oh, what is the typical habit is to fall back into some form of authoritarianism. Let's get the job done. Let's kneel before the emperors. Except we've done that, and we've studied it, and we find that we need something a little better because our expectations are beyond. We're looking for that, for a formula to the solutions that's acceptable, that we can live with. And Margaret Atwood's movie or program, the book, The Handmaid's Tale, reveals perhaps more of that thinking than we care, again, to admit. But Masons admit many things to themselves and one another by their actions, by our actions, by our behavior. And you can find, you notice, that I struggle with gender issues. I can't predict where I'll be 100 years from now in terms of my thinking. But I do know that there seems to be something I don't understand fully about the issue of gender and masonry. Part of it I understand. Part of it. And when I listen to some of the ideas and positions of women Freemasons, I absolutely understand that. And this is, I don't know, as much a throwback as perhaps a window into our future. A window into our future where people are looking for some reinforcement and acknowledgement. And we don't seem to have yet come up with all of the answers and solutions. And the discussion is relatively rough. It has rough edges right now. simply because we haven't had the opportunity to invite ourselves to the topic with some degree of confidence that we're capable of moving ahead. So welcome to this version, this episode, this occurrence of Masonic Effects, and thank you from around the world to our listeners, but particularly a tip of the hat to our listeners from Russia. Yeah, it kind of surprises me just because. And then in a way, it doesn't surprise me. And our listeners from India, yes, hello. Good to have you joining in. I hope today is both entertaining and informative. I think that you'll, and I hope, of course, that you'll like the commentary that developed. It's a little play on a phrase, if you had it to give. Yeah, I know, it's a bit... It's a bit obvious too, isn't it? Here's a little something to start to move on. This is, the international flavor of the international music of the world is what we try to address here in our own modest way. This is Charlie Bird. Yeah, that Charlie Bird. Yeah, that works, eh? Charlie Bird. It's really made a contribution to the satisfaction and joy, the pleasure in life. Yeah? No question about it in my mind. That was from Jitterbug Waltz. Some of you might remember that from some of the cartoons that were popular, became popular in the 60s. About the sort of the odd boy Charlie Brown and all his friends, and us picked up as one of the musical themes in that piece. It's I think an interesting introduction to what's coming. To set up the commentary today, if you had it to give, I want to share with you a piece of poetry. This is from a well-known, very famous German poet, Eduard Marieck, from 1845. And it made me think that in my mind, I'm not as old as the calendar suggests. I still have a sense of curiosity, and I feel it. There's just so much to, you know what I mean? There's just so much to do, just so much to get into from listening. I was just listening to some of the choral work of Karl Orff. Oh, just, you know, makes my hair on my arm stand up. This is his poem, Breitzke's poem, While on a Hike. And I think you'll relate to this, eh? I have backaches, bear my cross. I who wrote this here with chalk. Let he who has neither of these erase my rhyme if he so please. Who wrote these bitter words, too sour to jest with unskilled hand here upon this bench? An idle shepherd, perhaps, with who happened past, a wanderer from far off, surely no gladdened heart. 'Twas written neither yesterday nor today, already may have passed this lonely way. But he who took these lines to heart then applied them to himself with thought. He took with him, after a short rest, his own conscious burden along the path, and left for the next to happen by four sobering lines as food for though. I have backaches, bear my cross. I who wrote this here with chalk. Let he who has neither of these erase my rhyme if he so please. Been there, huh? Been there. Comes, it happens. If we could roll back time, if we could only roll back time, just savor that thought for a moment, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. If every man, one of us, took serious his oaths. If we employed the tools left for us by Pythagorean notions, the concept of masonry would be a silent and collective presence for good in the global community. Convincing an opponent the threat on the chessboard is without substance has been exploited, turning an apparent weakness into a very apparent strength. Would it be stretching reality too much to consider the hegemony of masonry? Would it be reasonable to suggest to Grand Masters the influence of masonry is not apparent in vacillations picked up by the most observant Grand Lodge? What if the draw of masonry has continued to appeal to contemplative minds? And what if those minds are compelled to forward the practices of masonry within their agency? I think it would be difficult to measure, but the thought itself opens up incredible possibilities for our future. Nothing combative is spoken about the status quo by those who carry out an ethical lifestyle. It would take a fool to believe a man could become better through education or learning that happens with a goal to morph knowledge into wisdom. Not aggressively, but competing within. That silly little game of hitting a little ball around fields into holes in the ground is anemic without appreciating that it is a test of concentration and control of emotion. A true golfer, like a true mason, competes within, and when he is successful, he understands its secrets. It gives us some satisfaction to consider there may be Masonic dark matter that accounts for the greatest influence of great ideas that does not follow the expected behavior of membership, but is far larger than what is visible to us. The ideas of the Renaissance, the Enlightenment, the Reformation, the Counter-Reformation, would be lost in time if not for learners, inspired by a short but unforgettable brush with masonry. Insight. Thank you. Stephen Grappelli. Yeah. Brilliant performer. Well into his later years, his autumn years. What if I'm having a little bit of a puzzle here, ladies and gentlemen. I'm confusion. My confusion is about declarations of privacy and secrecy. In real terms, often this kettling of ideas is determined by a committee or people who have developed protocols. And it seems at different times when there is disclosure, and there always is disclosure, the criteria seems odd, more self-serving, more selective, inconsistent with the general notion of privacy or secrecy. What's the purpose? How important is it? So we see a lot of documents by bureaucrats, determined by bureaucrats, to have a content sensitive so much that the release of that content to the general public would be detrimental. To whom, I say. So this notion of the truth will set you free and justice being blind seems to be at times a matter of convenience, and that causes me great confusion. That it would be prone to manipulation. It's not so much confusing now that I am naive. I've always been a bit naive and expected the best of people. I expect people to be honest. And sometimes it's broken my heart when I found that they've been less than what I expected. And yeah, that does sound naive. I understand that. And it's hurtful. Better to be the cynic that expects everybody to be mistrustful. I don't think I want to go go through my days thinking of the world around me, the people around me in those terms. So that presses on me a need to understand this more fully, with this notion of privacy. Oftentimes you'll have heard over the years that I intend to censor out certain things rather than put them out there on the airwaves. So in a way, I'm using my own criteria to censor, with a belief that you'll be at least able to acknowledge my sensitivity is well-intended and well-placed. But there's material that I don't, it's like I'm often work from material, as you, that comes from the public forum. I don't have a chain of evidence that is only within my hands, so that there's no chance that it's been tampered with. The material that I'm reading has been tampered with hugely. I sit down and try and read a monograph of science, and when I see how it's filtered into popular media, sometimes I shake my head. It's like you shift emphasis. And yes, I realize the embarrassment and sadness that we've experienced in the country I'm in, where we had a prime minister that censored, he muted our scientists for a political purpose, a true ideologue, a danger to true and reasonable people everywhere. And he's gone. He's from power, but he still has that. He's just been the next lout to bring voice to and articulate that kind of thinking. And there will, after him, there'll be another one, of course. I want to share with you a little bit of the material that I'm getting into to try and better understand the sense of privacy and secrecy and how I'm trying to come at it. It's not, and certainly this is one of those areas where I can't begin to understand it if all I'm listening to is a narrow, narrow translation, a narrow version handed to me. When somebody would do that to you, it's infantilizing. We struggle to have our own ideas, not to be putting words to ideas that were given to us by someone else. We can't really claim that that's us, huh? Listen here. This is with reference to Margaret C. Jacobs' work on Living the Enlightenment. It's about politics and Freemasonry, 18th century Europe. Funny that we can now, with time seems to heal all wounds. Time has allowed us to re-examine events and influence. We've always, as active and engaged people in our communities and in our cultures, of course we've always been aware of what's going on politically. Now, if we had remained severe in the criteria for membership in the craft, our group would be very, very small. Very, very small. It's with a small group that we can define and expect greater adherence, greater discretion. So if one of my colleagues is simply working out a theory and some of the information is unethical, we don't see a big gasp in the room. It's like the question is, where are we going with it? Where is he or she going with that idea? And then how can we And should we address the ethical side? Stem cell research is a good example. Science puts us in these, we can be well-suited, well-situated people and want to live a comfortable and simple life, and something chases us down. That brings us to the point of reviewing our own sense of ethics, our own practices. You know, the science and social convention has done that, brought those issues to us, or reminded us the issues are around us all the time. The harmonics and balance with other cultures, how we deal with the insanity of violence, how do we deal with that? Xenophobia, prejudice, you know, how do we deal with that? And the balance, the beauty, like the music that we listen to on Sonic Effects is simple. Here, this is Jacob's take on something I knew little about. This is about a Scottish form. It's a Scottish form of a lodge. It initiated members in a special degree, the grade of architect. Now, here it goes on to give very much in depth. I won't necessarily share that with you, but it appears the ceremony was unique to a lodge. These lodges had practices before these this sense of uniformity overtook us all. It's, to me, it's like the studios in Paris, you know, that had a particular form of artwork that was acceptable, and anything outside of the parameters or acceptable convention was irregular. And it makes me wonder, should it make us wonder? Remember, this is the lesson of the Impressionists. They were tried to submit their work, Lautrec, you know, Van Gogh, they tried to promote their work in gallery, in juried shows, the competition. And they weren't allowed. They weren't allowed to hang their art. And so the upstarts rented studio space, hung their art, and had their own show. And it was attended first by the brave and curious, and then a new world of art opened up, didn't it? A new expression of light, of imagination. So I'm reminded of that. And there's many, many more. The Wright brothers and what they did with the Corps of Engineers in the United States, how they handled the, you know, massive amounts of resources that the government, you know, the United States government was putting into the Corps of Engineers to develop manned flight. And these bicycle mechanics were marching to their own tune, truly. We'll talk about that another time. Interesting stuff. But those are examples of what? Juxtaposition, thinking outside the box. I like that. But in this regard, we're talking about a special grade that was unique to a lodge, and both men and women could be initiated into it. But you had to be a master or mistress of a lodge before being considered for this special wisdom embodied in the degree. And its recipient had to be initiated by a member of the Grand Lodge, hence a man, and vow to practice virtue, which was further articulated: virtue, silence, charity, fidelity, and temperance. And the mystical language of the degree permitted the men and women to become something other than what they were, to reach out through gesture and words for an illumination of the spirit that would be individually experienced as well as socially recognized. The initiation rite degree closed with a gesture of reason, and it carried with it a secret password. That's neither here nor there for us today. But the password permitted initiates to know one another. So as the manuscript catechism that accompanies the degree ceremony explains, the word signified production. The venerable representing the Grand Lodge and one of the other officers were meant to chant out the meaning of the universal Masonic work, which began and ended in the symbolic center of the lodge. And at the center stood the temple of virtue, and in its center shines a primitive light, the light of reason. The light of reason should the light of reason be shrouded with secrecy and privacy? Well, I'm not quibbling about whether it is, but should it be? And when I've listened to people talk about, you know, what are the essentials that shouldn't be spoken about, be honest with you, it tends to be a bit embarrassing. A bit, more than a bit mundane, more than a bit pedestrian. I compare it to the secrets of geometry that were so prevalent in medieval times, that they had a mystical quality, because you could use those shapes to make calculations, to predict. Different time, yeah. Now, you might say it's wrong-minded of me to apply the values of that day, the values of my day. But we want to do that when we experience historic revisionism. That character that was revived, and reviled, you know, don't stand up to the sense of time. Did we really know what that character was about? Do we really want to be represented by that type of character? Secrets, and it's almost like more of a storm. But there was a distinction made solely between non-Masons. The profane, masculine, and feminine, and those initiated into the light of all grades of masonry of adoption. The overwhelming impression, says Jacob, left by the records of Le Juste concerns virtue. The ethos of this lodge centered on moral improvement, on reason and work as the means to self-knowledge and worth. And such sentiments were commonplace in other exclusively male lodges during the period. But in those lodges, virtue was more overtly linked to the well-being of society, and most important, to governance. The lodges of men and women only indirectly embraced a larger political reality. In the 18th century, the constitutional ideal, the creation of constitutionally governed civil societies, was masculine work. The lodges of adoption provided access to that ideal, and inadvertently. They were primarily schools of manners and virtue, yet their brothers had to acknowledge that while aspects of Masonry remained purposefully hidden from their sisters, this new association of men and women without number, who in civil society scarcely have contact, are united together by the sweet bonds of fraternity. So in the 1750s in Dutch Freemasonry, these new lodges were intended to be universal. The records of Le Juste speak of the lodges of adoption which will establish themselves in the United Provinces. There is no firm evidence that other such lodges were established in the 1750s. But the possibility was contemplated for a brief time, intended for the use of all Dutch Freemasons. 1751 almanac printed toasts by which brothers and sisters in such lodges might begin with fête de table. Drink to our amiable sisters, my brothers, proclaims the ritual, answered by drink to our tender brothers. Very shortly, and probably with increasing gusto, all join in song, proclaiming our perfect union. In the same almanac of Madame de Broc is listed as Grande Maîtrise, but her name appears nowhere in the records of Dejust. It is just possible that at least one other lodge of adoption had been established in the Republic. Equally, what are the reactions to female masonry to be found among Mozart and his brothers? And do any of these responses find their way into the portrait of Mozart's evil queen? Remember, in the magic flute, there is a gender where it is gender specific. What could be more gender specific than the evil queen of the night? May relate to many contemporary themes which would be familiar to Mozart. If there are lodges of adoption in Vienna, can we only wonder that they would have made out of the what they would have made out of the evil personified by the queen and her entourage? In the 1770s in Paris, the proposal that one of the women's lodges had merged into a regular lodge evoked an outburst. A vain sex, indiscreet, fickle, possessed of dangerous instincts. We know women, their foolish spirit, their inconsequential heart, inconsistency is her only element. Given the inferior status accorded women throughout secret century, 18th century Europe, their removal from the ranks of the profane required explanation and justification. Their lack of freedom in marriage had been used to justify their exclusion from the lodges, which were to be composed of beings free and independent. Different perspective, yeah? Put another way, the first quality of a Mason is to be free, and liberty is never the allotment of women. Unable to offer or extol liberty, the adoptive rituals offer the sisters and brothers the route to virtue and implicitly to equality. But did the sisters and especially the brothers understand why they should undertake this particular journey jointly? This is from a performance in 1968 in Rotterdam. It's Horace Fitzsilver, one of my favorites. Thank you. Silver, 1968 in Rotterdam. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the program today. I'm glad that we've been able to connect. I want you to remind yourself to take good care of yourself. If you're committing acts of random kindness, you could include yourself in that list. And it's remarkable to think that we have been graced with the ability to perform a role bigger than ourselves, perhaps, to express something historical that is moving forward with all the scars and warts of an organization based on principles and philosophy that speaks very well, not only to the contemplative man, but the man of action who sits down at the periodically to reflect on his purpose and what's happened to him over the years. I look forward to having you join us again next week for another commentary and more discussion on things important to the nature of masonry. It's been a pleasure. And for all of you outstretched all over the world, I'm just so pleased that you're able to join us. Thanks.
Coucou, Mike and Noy, c'est Zaz, et on va vous faire Je veux, avec Ilan Alabou, Ilan Alabou à la basse, et Guillaume Viol à la guitare. Enchanté.
This is from North London.
One, two, three,
little impromptu music. Bye.
Okay.